Agatha held on to the rails for life, fighting terrible pain in her leg. But through the water she saw another one coming. With an ear-piercing screech, the snake-headed gargoyle tore through the flood and snatched her into the air. Just as its massive jaws yawned to devour her, Agatha thrust her foot between its teeth, which smashed down on her hard black clump and snapped like matchsticks. Dazed, the monster dropped her. Agatha crash-landed in the flooding gutter and gripped the rail. "Help!" she screamed. If she held on, someone would hear and rescue her. "Help!" Her hands slipped. She careened down eaves, jerking and heaving towards the last spout where the biggest gargoyle waited, horned like the devil, jaws wide over the spout like an infernal tunnel. Clawing, gurgling, Agatha tried to stop herself, but the rain bashed her along in gushing bursts. She looked down and saw the gargoyle blast fire from its nose, which rocketed across the pipe. Agatha ducked underwater to avoid instant cremation and bobbed back up, clinging to the rail's edge above the final drop. The next rush of rain would send her right into the gargoyle's open mouth. Then she remembered the gargoyles when she first saw them, guarding the gutter, spewing rain from their mouths. What goes out must come in. She heard the next wave coming behind her. With a silent prayer, Agatha let go and fell into the demon's smoking jaws. Just as fire and teeth skewered her, rain smashed through the spout behind her, shooting her through the hole in the gargoyle's throat and out into the grey sky. She glanced back at the choking gargoyle and let out a scream of relief, which turned to terror as she free fell. Through the fog, Agatha glimpsed a spiked wall about to impale her and an open window beneath it. She curled into a desperate ball, just missed the lethal blades, and crashed on her stomach, dripping wet and coughing up water, on the sixth floor of Malice Hall.
"I thought gargoyles were decoration," she wheezed.
Clutching her leg, Agatha limped down the dorm hall, hunting for signs of Sophie. Just as she was about to start pounding on doors, she caught sight of one at the end of the hall, graffitied with a caricature of a blonde princess, splashed with painted slurs. "Loser, reader, ever-lover." Agatha knocked hard.
"Sophie, it's me."
Doors started opening at the other end of the hall. Agatha pounded harder.
"Sophie!"
Black-robed girls started emerging from their rooms. Agatha jiggled Sophie's door handle and shoved against the frame, but it wouldn't budge. Just as the Never Girls turned, poised to discover the intruder in pink, Agatha took a running start, threw herself against the defaced door of room 66, which swung open and slammed shut behind her.
"You have no idea what I went through to get hit."
She stopped. Sophie was crouched over a puddle of water on the floor, singing as she applied blush in her reflection. "I'm a pretty princess, sweet as a pea, waiting for my prince to marry me." Three bunkmates and three rats watched from across the room, mouths open in shock. Hester looked up at Agatha.
"She flooded our floor to do her makeup," said Anna Dill.
"Whoever heard of anything so evil?" Dot grimaced, song included.
"Is my face even?" Sophie said, squinting into the puddle. "I can't go to class looking like a clown."
Her eyes shifted.
"Agatha, darling, about time you came to your senses. Your uglification class starts in 2 minutes and you don't want to make a poor first impression."
Agatha stared at her.
"Of course," Sophie said, standing up. "We have to switch clothes first. Come, off they go."
"You're not going to class, darling," Agatha said, turning red. "We're going to the schoolmaster's tower right now before we're stuck here forever."
"Don't be a boob," said Sophie, tugging at Agatha's dress. "We can't just break into some tower in broad daylight. And if you're going home anyway, you should give me your clothes now so I don't miss any assignments.
Agatha wrenched away.
Okay, that's it. Now listen to... You'll blend right in here,
Sophie smiled, studying Agatha next to her roommates. Agatha lost her fire.
Because I'm... ugly. Oh, for goodness sakes, Aggie, look at this place, Sophie said. You like gloom and doom. You like suffering and unhappiness and, burnt things. You'll be happy here.
We agree, said a voice behind Agatha, and she turned in surprise. You come live here, Hester said to her.
And she drowns in the lake, Dot scowled at Sophie, still wounded by her jibe at the welcoming.
We liked you the moment we saw you,
Annadil cooed, rats licking Agatha's feet.
You belong here with us,
Hester said, as she, Annadil, and Dot crowded around Agatha, whose head swung nervously between this villainous threesome. Did they really want to be her friend? Was Sophie right? Could being a villain make her... happy? Agatha's stomach churned. She didn't want to be evil, not when Sophie was good. They had to get out of this place before it tore them apart.
I'm not leaving you, she cried to Sophie, breaking away. No one's asking you to leave me, Agatha, Sophie said tightly. We're just asking you to leave your clothes.
No, Agatha shouted. We're not switching clothes. We're not switching rooms. We're not switching schools. Sophie and Hester exchanged furtive glances. We're going home, Agatha said, voice catching. We can be friends there, on the same side. No good, no evil. We'll be happy forever. Sophie and Hester tackled her. Dot and Annadil pulled the pink dress off Agatha's body, and the four of them shoved Sophie's black robes on in its place. Shimmying into her new pink dress, Sophie threw open the door.
Goodbye, evil. Hello, love.
Agatha stumbled to her feet and looked down at a putrid black sack that fit just how she liked.
And all is right in the world, Hester sighed. Really, I don't know how you were ever friends with that Get back here,
Agatha yelled, pursuing Sophie in pink through the hall's hordes of black. Shocked by an Ever in their midst, Nevers swarmed around Sophie and started to beat her about the head with books, bags, and shoes.
No, she's one of us.
All the Nevers turned to Hort in the stairwell, including dumbstruck Sophie. Hort pointed at Agatha in black.
That's the Ever.
The Nevers unleashed a new war cry and mobbed Agatha as Sophie shoved Hort away and escaped down the stairs. Agatha scraped through the gauntlet with a few well-placed kicks and slid down the banister to cut Sophie off. With Sophie in sight, she tracked her through a tight corridor, reached out her hand to grab her by the pink collar, but Sophie turned a corner, ran up snaking steps, and veered off the first floor. Agatha swerved into a dead end, saw Sophie magically jump through a wall, blood-spattered, no students, and with a flying leap, Agatha jumped through the portal right after her, and landed on the evil end of Halfway Bridge. But this was where the chase ceased, for Sophie was too far to good to catch. Through the fog, Agatha could see her glowing with joy.
Agatha, he's King Arthur's son! Sophie gushed. A real-life prince. But what do I say to him? How do I show him I'm the one?
Agatha tried to hide her hurt.
You'd leave me here. Alone.
Sophie's face softened.
Please don't worry, Aggie. Everything's perfect now, she said gently. We'll still be best friends, just in different schools like we planned. No one can stop us from being friends, can they?
Agatha gazed at Sophie's beautiful smile and believed her. But all of a sudden, her friend's smile vanished, because on Sophie's body, the pink dress magically rotted to black.
Just like that, Sophie was in her old, sagging villain robes, swan glittering over her heart. She looked up and gasped. Across the bridge, Agatha's black robes had shrunk back to pink. The two girls gaped at each other in shock. Suddenly, shadows swept over Sophie, and Agatha spun. The giant wave swelled high above her, waters curling into a shimmering lasso. Before Agatha could run, it swooped and hurled her across the bay into sunlit mist. Sophie lunged to the bridge's gloomy edge and let out a wail of injustice. The wave slowly rose back over her, but this time its waters didn't shimmer. With a belligerent roar, it smashed Sophie back into the school for evil, and right back on schedule. Chapter 7 Grand High Witch Ultimate.
Why do we need to uglify?
Sophie peeked through her fingers at Professor Manley's bald, pimpled head and squash-colored skin, trying not to gag. Around her, Nevers sat at charred desks with rusty mirrors, cheerily bashing tadpoles to death in iron bowls. If she didn't know better, she'd think they were making a Sunday cake. "Why am I still here?" she fumed through furious tears.
"Why do we need to be revolting and repugnant?" Manley jowled. "Hester?" "Because it makes us fearsome,"
Hester said, and swigged her tadpole juice, instantly springing a rash of red pox.
"Wrong," roared Manley. "Annadil." "Because it makes little boys cry,"
Annadil said, sprouting her own red blisters.
"Wrong." "Dot?"
"Because it's easier to get ready in the morning," Dot asked, mixing her juice with chocolate.
"Wrong and stupid,"
Manley scorned.
"Only once you give up the surface can you dig beneath it. Only once you relinquish vanity can you be yourself."
Sophie crawled behind desks, lunged for the door. The knob burnt her hand, and she yelped.
"Only once you destroy who you think you are can you embrace who you truly are,"
Manley said, glaring right at her. Whimpering, Sophie crawled back to her desk, past villains exploding in shingles. Smoky green ranks popped out of thin air around her, one over Hester, two over Annadil, three over oily, brown-skinned Ruvan, four over blonde, pointy-eared Vex. Hort drank his draught excitedly, only to see a wee zit spurt from his chin. He smacked away a stinky 19, but the rank smacked him right back.
"Ugliness means you rely on intelligence," Manley leered, slinking towards Sophie. "Ugliness means you trust your soul. Ugliness means freedom."
He flung a bowl onto her desk. Sophie looked down into the black tadpole juice. Some of it was still moving.
"Actually, Professor, I believe my beautification teacher will object to my participation in this assignment."
"Three failing marks and you'll end up something uglier than me,"
Manley spat. Sophie looked up.
"I really don't think that's possible."
Manley turned to the class.
"Who would like to help our dear Sophie taste freedom?"
"Me."
Sophie whipped around.
"Don't worry," Hort whispered. "You'll look better this way."
Before Sophie could scream, he plunged her head into the bowl. Lying in a puddle on the banks of Good, Agatha replayed the scene from Evil. Her best friend had called her a boob, flying tackled her, stolen her clothes, left her to witches, and then asked for love advice. "It's this place," she thought. "In Gavaldon, Sophie would forget about classes and castles and boys. In Gavaldon, they could find a happy ending together. Not here. I just need to get us home." And yet, something still bothered her. That moment on the bridge, Sophie in pink against the school for good, she in black against the school for evil. Everything is perfect now.
Sophie said. And she was right. For a brief moment, the mistake had been corrected. They were where they belonged. So why couldn't we stay? Whatever happened, it was a close call, because once Sophie made it to good, she'd never leave. Agatha's breath shallowed. She had to make sure the faculty didn't discover the mix-up. She had to make sure they weren't switched to the right schools. But how could she make sure Sophie stayed put? Go to class, her heart whispered. Pollock said the schools kept an even number of students to preserve the balance. So for the mistake to be corrected, they both would have to be switched. As long as Agatha held her place in the school for good, then Sophie was stuck in the school for evil. And if there was one thing she knew for sure, it was that Sophie couldn't possibly last as a villain. A few more days there, and she'd beg for Gavaldon. Go to class. Of course. She would find a way to last at this horrid school and wear Sophie down. For the first time since they were kidnapped, Agatha opened her heart to Hope. Hope died 10 minutes later. Professor Emma Anemone, whistling in a blinding yellow dress and long fox fur gloves, walked into her pink taffy classroom, took one look at Agatha, and stopped whistling. But then she murmured, "Rapunzel took some work too," and launched into her first lesson on making smiles kinder.
"Now, the key is to communicate with your eyes," she chirped, and demonstrated the perfect princess smile.
With her bulging eyes and wild yellow hair matching her dress, Agatha thought she looked like a manic canary. But Agatha knew her chances of getting home rested in her hands, so she mimicked her toothy beam with the others. Professor Anemone walked around surveying the girls.
"Not so much squinting. A little less nose, dear. Oh, my. Absolutely beautiful."
She was talking about Beatrix, who lit up the room with her dazzling smile.
"That, my Evers, is a smile that can win the heart of the steeliest prince. A smile that can broker peace in the greatest of wars. A smile that can lead a kingdom to hope and prosperity."
Then she saw Agatha.
"You there. No smirking."
With her teacher looming, Agatha tried to concentrate and duplicate Beatrix's perfect smile. For a second, she thought she had it.
"Goodness! Now it's a creepy grin. A smile, child. Just your normal, everyday smile."
Happy. Think of something happy. But all she could think of was Sophie on the bridge, leaving her for a boy she didn't even know.
"Now it's positively malevolent," Professor Anemone shrieked.
Agatha turned and saw the whole class cowering, as if expecting her to turn them all into bats.
"Do you think she eats children?" said Beatrix.
"I'm so glad I moved out," Rena sighed. Agatha frowned. Couldn't have been that bad. Then she saw Professor Anemone's face.
"If you ever need a man to trust you, if you ever need a man to save you, if you ever need a man to love you, whatever you do, child, don't smile at him."
Princess etiquette, taught by Pollux, was worse. He arrived in a bad mood, hobbling with his massive canine head attached to a skinny goat's carcass and muttering that Castor
has the body this week.
He looked up and saw girls staring at him.
"Dear, I thought I was teaching princesses. All I see are 20 ill-mannered girls gaping like toads. Are you toads? Do you like to catch flies with your little pink tongues?"
The girls stopped staring after that. The first lesson was Princess Posture, which involved the girls descending the 4-tower staircases with nests of nightingale eggs on their heads. Though most of the girls succeeded without breaking any eggs, Agatha had a harder time. There were a number of reasons for this: a lifetime of slouching, Beatrix and Rena intently watching her with their new, kinder smiles, her mind chattering that Sophie would win this with her eyes closed, and the absurdity of a dog barking about posture while teetering on goat legs. In the end, she left 20 eggs bleeding yolk on marble.
20 beautiful nightingales who will not have life because of you, said Pollux. As class ranks appeared over each girl in ethereal gold clouds, Beatrix first, of course, Agatha spun to see a rusted 20 hover over, then crash into her head.
Two classes, two last place ranks. One more and she would learn what happened to children who failed. With her plan to get Sophie home crumbling by the minute, Agatha hurried to her next class, desperate to prove herself good. Shingles wouldn't keep Cinderella from the ball. Shingles wouldn't keep Sleeping Beauty from her kiss. Staring at her pustuled reflection in her desk mirror, Sophie forced her kindest smile. She had solved every problem in life with beauty and charm, and she would solve this one the same way. Henchman training took place in the Belfry, a dreary open-air cloister atop Malice Tower that required a 30-flight ascent up a staircase so narrow the students were squeezed into single file.
"So nauseous,"
Dot panted like an overheated camel.
"If she pukes near me, I'm throwing her off the tower," Hester crabbed.
As she climbed, Sophie tried not to think about pustules, puke, or putrid Hort, who was trying to cram beside her.
"I know you hate me," he pressed.
She lurched to the right to block him. Hort tried the left.
"But it was the challenge, and I didn't want you to fail, and..."
Sophie thwarted him with her elbow and raced up the last few steps, desperate to prove to her new teacher she was in the wrong place. Unfortunately, that teacher was Castor.
"Course I'll get the reader in my group."
Even worse, his assistant, Beezel, was the red-skinned dwarf that Sophie had slapped on the ladder the day before. Upon seeing her blistered face, he giggled like a hyena.
"Ugly witch."
Head off-center on his massive dog's body, Castor wasn't as amused.
"You're all revolting enough as it is,"
he groused, and sent Beezel to fetch honeysuckle, which promptly restored the villains' faces. While they groaned in disappointment, Sophie heaved with relief.
"Whether you win or lose your battles depends on the competence and loyalty of your henchmen," Castor said. "Of course, some of you will end up henchmen yourselves, with your own lives depending on the strength of your leader. Better pay attention, then, if you want to stay alive."
Sophie gritted her teeth. Agatha was probably singing to doves somewhere, and here she was about to wrangle bloodthirsty goons.
"And now, for your first challenge. How to train..."
Castor stepped aside.
"A golden goose."
Sophie gaped at an elegant, gold-feathered bird behind him, sleeping serenely in its nest.
"But golden geese hate villains," Annadil frowned. "Which means if you can train one, then taming a mountain troll will be easy," Castor said.
The goose opened its pearly blue eyes, took in its villainous audience, and smiled. "Why is it smiling?" Dot said.
"Because it knows we're wasting our time," Hester said. "Golden geese only listen to Evers."
"Excuses, excuses," Castor yawned. "Your job is to make that pathetic creature lay one of its prized eggs. The bigger the egg, the higher your rank."
Sophie's heart raced. If the bird only listened to good, she could prove here and now she didn't belong with these monsters. All she had to do was make the goose lay the biggest egg. On the belfry wall, Castor carved 5 strategies for training henchmen. 1, command. 2, taunt. 3, trick. 4, bribe. 5, bully.
"Now, don't go bullying the blasted bird unless you've gone through the other 4,
Castor warned.
"Ain't nothing stopping a henchman from bullying back."
Sophie made sure she was last in line and watched the first 5 kids have 0 luck, including Vex, who went as far as grabbing its throat, only to see the golden goose smile in return. Miraculously, Hort was the first to succeed. He had tried barking,
"Lay egg,"
calling it a "prat," and tempting it with worms before giving up and kicking its nest. Wrong thing to kick. In a flash, the goose yanked his tunic over his head and Hort yelped about blindly, banging into walls. Sophie vowed if she had to see this boy one more time without clothes, she'd gouge out her eyes. But the goose seemed delighted. It flapped its wings and sniggered and squawked so raucously that it lost control and excreted a golden egg the size of a coin. Hort held it up in stunned triumph.
I won!
Right, because in the heat of battle you'll have time to run around naked and make your goose crap,
Castor snarled. Still, the dog had said whoever made the biggest egg won. So the other Nevers mimicked Hort's tactic. Dot made faces, Ruvan made shadow puppets, Anadil tickled it with a feather, and bald, doughy Brone sat on Beezel, much to the bird's delight.
Smelly witch,
the dwarf howled. Scowling at all this, Hester walked up and punched the goose in the stomach. It dropped an egg the size of a fist.
Amateurs, she sneered.
Then it was Sophie's turn. She approached the golden goose, which seemed exhausted from laughing and laying. But when the goose met Sophie's gaze, it stopped blinking and sat still as a statue, studying every inch of her. For a moment, Sophie felt an eerie chill float through her body, as if she'd let a stranger into her soul. But then she looked into the bird's warm, wise eyes and swelled with hope. Surely it saw she was different from the rest.
Yes, you certainly are different.
Sophie backed up. She peeked around to see if anyone else had heard the bird's thoughts. But the rest of the Nevers just glowered impatiently, since she had to finish before they got their ranks. Sophie turned to the goose.
You can hear my thoughts.
They're quite loud, replied the goose.
What about the others?
No, just you.
Because I'm good, Sophie smiled. I can give you what you want, said the goose. I can make them see you're a princess. One perfect egg, and they'll put you with your prince.
Sophie dropped to her knees. Please, I'll do anything you want. Just help me. The bird smiled.
Close your eyes and make a wish.
Overcome with relief, Sophie closed her eyes. In that shining moment, she wished for Tedros, her beautiful, perfect prince who could make her happy. She suddenly wondered if Agatha told him they were friends. She hoped not. Gasps flew around her. Sophie opened her eyes and saw the goose's gold feathers finish turning grey. Its eyes darkened from blue to black. Its warm smile went dead. And there was definitely no egg.
What happened? Sophie twirled. What's it mean?
Castor looked petrified.
It means she'd rather give up her power than help you.
A one exploded in red flames over Sophie's head like a diabolical crown.
It's the most evil thing I've ever seen, Castor said softly.
Stunned, Sophie watched her classmates huddle like scared minnows, all except Hester, eyes blazing, as if she'd just found her competition. Behind her, Beezel shivered deep in a dark corner.
Grand witch,
he squeaked.
No, 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 Sophie cried. Not Grand Witch.
But Beezel nodded with certainty.
Grand High Witch Ultimate.
Sophie whipped back to the goose.
What did I do?
But the goose, grey as fog, looked at her as if it had never seen her in its life, and let out the most ordinary of squawks. From the belfry, the squawk echoed across the moat into the soaring silver tower that split the two sides of the bay. A silhouette appeared at the window and gazed down at his domain. Dozens of smoky rank numbers, brightly coloured ones from good, dark and gloomy ones from evil, drifted from the two schools over the waters and wafted up to his window like balloons in the wind. As each one passed, his fingers ran through the smoke, which gave him the power to see whose rank it was and how they had earned it. He sifted through dozens of numbers until he came to the one he sought. A red flame one that revealed its history in a flood of images. A golden goose throwing away its power for a student. Only one could have such talent. Only one could be so pure. The one who would tip the balance. With a chill, the schoolmaster went back into his tower and awaited her arrival. Curses and death traps took place in a bone-numbing frost chamber, with the walls, desks, and chairs made completely of ice. Sophie thought she could see bodies buried deep beneath its frozen floor.
It's cold, Hort chattered.
It's warmer in the doom room, Lady Lesso replied.
Howls of pain echoed from the dungeon beneath their feet.
I feel warmer now,
Hort stuttered, face blue.
Cold will harden your veins, said Lady Lesso, which need hardening if a reader is placing first in challenges.
She slunk between rows of shivering students, black braids snapping against her sharp-shouldered purple gown, dagger steel heels cracking on ice.
This is not a school for unwarranted cruelty. Hurt without reason, and you are a beast, not a villain. No, our mission requires focus and care. In this class, you will learn to find the ever who stands in the way of your goal. The one who will grow stronger as you grow weaker. They are out there, my nevers, somewhere in the woods. Your nemesis. When the time is right, you will find and destroy them. That is your path to freedom.
A scream echoed from the doom room, and Lady Lesso smiled.
Your other classes may be pageants of ineptitude, but not here. There will be no challenges until I see you are worthy.
Sophie hadn't heard any of this. All she could hear was the goose's squawk banging around in her head. Convulsing with cold, she fought back tears. She had tried everything to get to good. Fleeing, fighting, pleading, switching, wishing. What else was left? She pictured Agatha, sitting in her classes, her seat, her school, and flushed hot red. She thought they were friends.
A nemesis is your arch-enemy, said Lady Lesso, purple eyes flashing. Your other half, your soul's inverse, your Achilles heel.
Sophie forced herself to pay attention. After all, here was a chance to learn enemy secrets. It might save her once she made it to good.
You will come to know your nemesis through dreams, Lady Lesso went on, veins pulsing under tight skin. A nemesis will haunt your sleep night after night until you see nothing but his or her face. Nemesis dreams will chill your heart and boil your blood. They will make you gnash your teeth and rip out your hair, for they are the sum of your hate. The sum of your fears.
Lady Lesso dragged her long red nails across Hort's desk.
Only when your nemesis is dead will you feel quenched. Only when your nemesis is dead will you feel free. Kill your nemesis, and nevermore will welcome you to eternal glory.
The class tittered with excitement.
Of course, given our school's history, those gates won't open any time soon, she muttered.
How do we find our nemesis? Asked Dot.
Who chooses them?
Asked Hester. Will they be from our class? Ravan asked.
These questions are premature. Only exceptional villains are blessed with nemesis dreams,
Lady Lesso said.
No. First, you should be asking why stuck-up, stupid, insipid good wins every competition in this school, and how you're going to change that.
She leered at Sophie, as if to say whether she liked it or not, the pink-loving reader might be their best hope. As soon as the wolves' howl signalled class was over, Sophie darted from the ice room, up twisting stairs until she found a small balcony off a hall. In the privacy of fog, she leaned against the damp walls of the evil tower and finally let herself cry. She didn't care if it ruined her makeup or if anyone saw. She had never felt so alone or scared. She hated this horrible place and couldn't take any more. Sophie gazed at the school for good, glass towers glinting across the bay. For the first time, it seemed out of reach.
Lunch! Tedros would be there. Her shining prince, her last hope. Isn't that what princes were for, after all? To rescue princesses when all seemed lost?
Heart swelling, she wiped her tears.
Just make it to lunch.
As she sprinted to Evil Hall for History of Villainy, Sophie noticed scores of buzzing nevers crowded outside. Dot saw her and grabbed her arm.
They cancelled classes. No one's saying why.
Lunch will be sent to your rooms, boomed the White Wolf, as fellow wolves cracked whips and drove students to their towers.
Sophie's heart deflated.
But what happened?
She suddenly smelled smoke, creeping into the hall from every direction. Sophie slid between the shoving mob to a stone window where a group of students stared in stunned silence. She followed their eyes across the bay. A good tower was on fire. Dot gasped.
Who could possibly have done something so...
Brilliant,
Hester said, awestruck. Well, Agatha had the answer to that. Chapter 8. Wish Fish. An hour before, Tedros had decided on a swim. By now, the ranks for the first two classes were up on the groom room doors, with the prince and Beatrix tied for first, and Agatha's name so low on the board that a pile of mouse droppings obscured it. Inside, the girls' groom room resembled a medieval spa, with three aromatic bath pools, hot, cold, and just right, a little match girl sauna, three rose-red makeup stations, a Cinderella-themed pedicure corner, and a waterfall shower built into a little mermaid lagoon. The boys' groom rooms focused more on fitness, with a Midas gold sweat lodge, a peasant-themed tanning room, and a gymnasium with Norse hammers, mud wrestling pit, saltwater lap pool, and a full array of Turkish baths. After chivalry and grooming, Tedros took advantage of the break before swordplay to test out the pool. But just as he swam his last lap, he noticed Beatrix, and the seven girls who now followed her incessantly, peering wide-eyed through the cracks in the wooden door. Tedros was used to girls watching him, but when would he find one who saw more than his looks, who saw more than King Arthur's son, who cared about his thoughts, his hopes, his fears? And yet here he was, pivoted purposely as he toweled so the girls could have a perfect view. His mother was right. He could pretend all he wanted, but he was just like his father, for better and worse. With a sigh, he threw open the door to greet his fan club, breeches dripping, swan glittering on bare chest. But they were gone, victims of the fairy patrol. Tedros felt a twinge of disappointment as he turned the corner, only to smash into something, knocking it flat to the ground.
I'm wet. Again. Agatha frowned and looked up. You should watch where you're...
It was the boy who had warped Sophie's mind. the boy who had hijacked Sophie's heart, the boy who had stolen her only friend.
"I'm Tedros," he said, and held out his hand.
Agatha didn't take it. She was hopelessly lost and needed directions, but this Tedros was the enemy. She pulled herself up, gave him a lethal glare, and shoved past his chest. That's when she noticed, in addition to everything else she hated about this boy, he smelled like one too. She stormed to the end of the hall, clumps thunking ogreishly on glass, and with a last venomous sneer, snatched at the door. It was locked.
"It's this way."
Tedros pointed to the stairwell behind him. Agatha huffed past him, holding her nose.
"Nice to meet you," the prince called.
He heard her snort in disgust before she trundled down the steps, casting shadows all the way. Tedros grimaced. Girls loved him. They always loved him. But this freakish girl looked at him like he was nothing. For a moment, he felt his confidence crack, then remembered what his father once said. "The best villains make you doubt." Tedros thought he could face down any monster, any witch, any force evil could conjure. But this girl was different. This girl was scary. Dread pricked his spine. "So why is she in my school?" Animal communication, taught by Princess Uma, took place on the lakeside banks of Halfway Bay. For the third time that day, Agatha arrived to find a class was girls only. Surely the School for Evil didn't see the need to decide what was a boy skill or a girl skill. But here in the Good Towers, the boys went off to fight with swords, while girls had to learn dog barks and owl hoots. No wonder princesses were so impotent in fairy tales, she thought. If all they could do was smile, stand straight, and speak to squirrels, then what choice did they have but to wait for a boy to rescue them? Princess Uma looked far too young to be a teacher. Nestled in prim grass, backlit by lake shimmer, she sat very still, hands folded in her pink dress, with black hair to her waist, olive skin, almond-shaped eyes, and crimson lips pursed in a tight O. When she did speak, it was in a giggly whisper, but she couldn't make it through a full sentence. Every few words, she'd stop to listen to a distant fox or dove and respond with her own giddy howl or chirp. When she realized she had a whole class staring at her, she cupped her hands over her face.
"Oops," she tee-heed, "I have too many friends."
Agatha couldn't tell if she was nervous or just an idiot.
"Evil has many weapons on its side," said Princess Uma, finally settling down. "Poisons, plagues, curses, hexes, henchmen, and black magic. But you have animals."
Agatha snickered. When faced with an axe-wielding henchman, she would be sure to bring a butterfly. Judging by the others' faces, she wasn't the only one unconvinced. Princess Uma noticed. The teacher unleashed a piercing whistle, and a barrage of barks, bays, neighs, and roars blasted from the woods beyond the schools. The girls plugged their ears in shock.
"See?" Uma chuckled. "Every animal can talk to you if you know how to talk to them. Some even remember when they were human."
With a chill, Agatha thought of the stuffed animals in the gallery. All former students, just like them.
"I know everyone wants to be a princess," said Uma. "But those of you with low ranks won't make good princesses. You'd end up shot or stabbed or eaten, and that's not very useful. But as a sidekick fox or spying sparrow or friendly pig, you might find a much happier ending."
She squeaked through her teeth, and on cue, an otter bobbed to shore from the lake, balancing a jeweled storybook on its nose.
"You might keep a captive maiden company or lead her to safety," Uma said, holding out her hands.
The nervous otter bumped the book on his nose to find the right page.
Or you might help make a ball gown,
Uma said, eyeing the bumbling creature.
Or you might deliver an urgent message, or...
With a yip, the otter found the page, slid the book into her hands, and collapsed from stress.
You might even save a life,
said Uma, holding up a brilliant painting of a princess cowering as a stag speared a warlock. The princess looked just like her.
Once upon a time, an animal saved mine, and in return, it received the happiest ending of all.
From narrowed suspicion, Agatha saw all the girl's eyes widen to worship. This wasn't just a teacher. This was a living, breathing princess.
So, if you want to be like me, you need to do well in today's challenge,
chirped their new idol, summoning the girls to the lake. Agatha felt herself shiver, despite the balmy fall sun. If she placed last this time, she'd never see Sophie or home again. As she followed the girls to the bank, sick to her stomach, Agatha noticed Uma's storybook, open in the grass.
Animals love to help princesses for so many reasons,
said Princess Uma, stopping at the water's edge.
Because we sing pretty songs, because we give them shelter in the scary woods, because they only wish they could be as beautiful and beloved as...
Wait. Uma and the girls turned. Agatha held up the storybook's last page, a painting of the stag ripped to pieces by monsters as the princess escaped.
How is that a happy ending?
If you aren't good enough to be a princess, then you're honored to die for one, of course.
Uma smiled, as if she would learn this lesson soon enough. Agatha looked to the others in disbelief, but they were all nodding like sheep. It didn't matter if only a third of them would graduate as princesses. Each was completely convinced she'd be one. No, those stuffed, mounted creatures in the museum weren't once girls like them. They were just animals. Slaves to the greater good.
But if animals are going to help us, first we have to tell them what we want,
Uma said, kneeling before the gleaming blue lake.
So today's challenge is...
She swirled her finger in the water, and a thousand tiny fish surfaced, white as snow.
Wish fish,
Uma beamed.
They dig inside your soul and find your greatest wish. Very helpful if you've lost your tongue or voice and need to tell a prince to kiss you. Now, all you do is put your finger in the water and the fish will read your soul. The girl with the strongest, clearest wish wins.
Agatha wondered what these girls' souls would wish for. Depth, perhaps? Millicent went first. She put her finger in the water, closed her eyes. When she opened them, the fish had all turned different colours and were gaping at her, confused.
What happened? Said Millicent.
Foggy mind,
Uma sighed. Then Kiko, the adorable girl who had gifted Agatha lipstick, put her finger in the water. The fish turned red, orange, and peach, and started assembling into some kind of picture. What do good souls wish for? Agatha wondered, watching the fish jumble into place. Peace for their kingdoms? Health for their families? Destruction of evil? The fish drew a boy instead.
Tristan,
Kiko chimed, recognizing his ginger hair.
I caught his rose at welcoming.
Agatha groaned. She should have known. Then Rena dipped her finger, and the fish changed colours, gliding into a mosaic of a burly grey-eyed boy, pulling an arrow into his bow.
Tadik, blushed Rena, on a tower, room 10.
Giselle's fish drew dark-skinned Nicholas. Flavia wished for Oliver. Sahara's painted Oliver's bunkmate Bastian. At first,
Agatha found it dumb, but now it was scary. This was what good souls craved? Boys they didn't even know? Based on what?
Love at first sight, Uma gushed, is the most beautiful thing in the world.
Agatha gagged. Who could ever love boys, preening useless thugs who thought the world belonged to them? She thought of Tedros, and her skin burned. Hate at first sight. Now that was believable. With the fish poop from drawing so many chiseled jaws, Beatrix provided the grand climax, sending her wish fish into a spectacular rainbow of her fairy tale wedding to Tedros, complete with castle, crowns, and fireworks. All around, girls' eyes welled with tears, either because the scene was so beautiful or because they knew they could never compete.
Now you must hunt him, Beatrix, Uma said. You must make this Tedros your mission, your obsession, because when a true princess wants something enough...
She swirled her fingers in the lake.
Your friends unite for you.
The fish turned bright pink.
Fight for you.
The fish clustered tight.
And make your wish come true.
Uma reached her arm into the water and pulled it right out. The fish transformed into her soul's greatest desire.
What is it? Rena asked, confused.
A suitcase,
whispered Princess Uma, and hugged it to her chest. She looked up at 20 befuddled girls.
Oh, should I give you your ranks?
But she didn't go yet, said Beatrix, pointing at Agatha.
Agatha would have globbered her, but there was no menace in Beatrix's voice. This girl wasn't troubled that a lake full of fish had just been turned into luggage. Instead, she was worried Agatha didn't have her turn. Perhaps she wasn't so bad after all.
So Rena can have her room when she fails,
Beatrix smiled. Agatha took it back.
Oh dear, one left,
said Uma, staring at Agatha. She gazed at the lake, empty of wish fish, then at her precious pink suitcase.
It happens every time,
she mourned. With a sigh, she dropped it back into the lake and watched it sink and bob up as 1,000 white fish. Agatha leaned over the water to see the fish glaring up at her with droopy eyes. For a moment, they had found heaven in a suitcase. But here they were again, genies stolen from the safety of the lamp. And they didn't care that her life was on the line. They just wanted to be left alone. Agatha sympathized. Mine's easy, she thought. I wish not to fail. That's it. Don't fail. She stuck her finger in the water. The fish started trembling like tulips in the wind. Agatha could hear wishes wrestle in her head. Don't fail. Home in bed. Don't fail. Sophie safe. Don't fail. Tedros dead. The fish turned blue, then yellow, then red. Wishes swept into a cyclone. New face, same face, blonde hair. I hate blonde hair. More friends, no friends.
Not just foggy, murmured Princess Uma, completely confused.
The fish, red as blood, started to quake, as if about to explode. Alarmed, Agatha tried to pull out her finger, but the water clamped it like a fist. What the... The fish turned black as night and flew to Agatha like magnets to metal, pooling her hand in a shivering mass. Girls fled the shore in horror. Uma stood anchored in shock. Frantic, Agatha tried to wrench her hand, but her head exploded with pain. Home, school, mum, dad, good, bad, boys, girls, ever, never. Gripping Agatha's hand, the fish shook harder and harder, faster and faster, until she couldn't tell one from the other. Eyes popped off like buttons, beating fins shattered to bits, bellies engorged with veins and vessels, until the fish let out 1,000 tortured screams. Agatha felt her head split in two. Fail, win, truth, lies, lost, found, strong, weak, friend, foe. The fish swelled into a ballooning black mass, creeping up her hand.
Agatha thrashed to free her finger until she heard her bone break and yowled in agony as the screaming fish sucked her whole arm into their ebony cocoon. Help! Somebody help me! The cocoon billowed into her face, suffocating her cries. With a high, sickening shriek, the deathly womb swallowed her. Agatha flailed for breath, tried to kick herself out, but pain seared through her head and forced her into a fetal crouch. Hate, love, punish, reward, hunter, hunted, live, die, kill, kiss, take. Screaming with vengeance, the black cocoon sucked her deeper, like a gelatinous grave, stifling her last breaths, leeching her every last drop of life, until there was nothing left to... give. The screaming stopped. The cocoon sloughed away. Agatha fell back in shock. In her arms was a girl, no more than 12 or 13, with toffee skin and a tangle of dark curls. She stirred, opened her eyes, and smiled at Agatha as if she were an old friend. 100 years, and you were the first who wished to free me. Gasping softly, like a fish on land, she pressed her hand to Agatha's cheek. Thank you. She closed her eyes, and her body went limp in Agatha's arms. Inch by inch, the girl started to glow the color of hot gold, and with a burst of white light, she splintered to sunbeams and disappeared. Agatha gawked at the lake, empty of fish, and listened to her fraying heartbeat. It felt like her insides had been beaten and wrung out. She held up her finger, healed like new. Was all that... She took a deep breath and turned. Normal? The entire class was dispersed behind trees, including Princess Uma, whose expression answered her question. Loud squawks pealed from above. Agatha looked up at the friendly dove her teacher had greeted earlier. Only the dove's calls weren't friendly anymore, but wild, frantic. From the endless woods came a fox's growl, guttural and disturbed. Then more howls and wails from all around, nothing like the earlier welcome. The animals were in a frenzy now. They screamed louder, louder, building with fever. What's happening? Agatha cried, hands over ears. As soon as she saw Princess Uma's face, she knew. They want it too. Before Agatha could move, the stampede came from every direction. Squirrels, rats, dogs, moles, deer, birds, cats, rabbits, the bumbling otter, every animal on the school grounds, every animal that could squeeze through the gates, charged towards their savior.
Make us human, they demanded.
Agatha blanched. Since when could she understand animals? Save us, princess, they cried. Since when could she understand delusional animals? What do I do? Agatha shouted. Uma took one glance at these animals, her faithful puppets, her bosom friends. Run! For the first time, someone at this school gave Agatha advice she could use. She dashed for the towers as magpies pecked her hands, mice clung to her clumps, frogs hopped up her dress. Batting at the mob, she stumbled up the hill, shielding her head, hurdling hogs, hawks, hares. But just as she had the white swan doors in